Good morning, everyone. So I'm going to speak in behalf of the CSO group, this group that met on the two weekends ago and decided on what would be the 10 points that COP9 to be successful should pursue. And we're able to produce a coherent and very unified ground position on the main issues at stake. So as you have probably in your hands, we decided to have this evaluation right now because this would be the make or the break of the COP9. And the first issue that we raised is about participation. And this is not when we refer and was referred here about English speaking constraints. I mean, only can speak at this convention the ones who can speak in English and read and write also. It's not a minor issue or an interpretation issue. It's a structurally, that is a structural question that can fundamentally, if we take it to the extreme, present a flawed nature to the whole process. Because I can tell you that from my experience in the working group on agricultural biodiversity, the very content, the very substance of the language that's being worked is on the chair, friends of the chair groups, on over the working groups, with no interpretation or translations. So this opens the room to only those countries and those delegations that can really manage not only English, but the very tricky and the very nuances on the diplomatic language to make their way through and connect with all the other working groups that are going on. So we are kind of shocked when we realize that this is going on. We have asked the responsible people about it, and they have said that this has always been like this. So I asked, okay, but where is written that in a UN meeting that has six UN official languages, there is no translation other or interpretation other than at the plenary session? And they just responded, it has been always like this. So we should not allow that this naturalization process of such issue that is so important and so structured goes further on. We call for an immediate review of this this participation question that is it's being hindered by the interpretation. And this goes in the same line what the Indigenous Forum representative just said, that meanwhile, decisions are at the table that may damage or minimize Indigenous people participation on the next meetings, because there will be no more budget allocations. And at the same time, we also heard, and it's well publicized around, that there is a request of 220,000, I'm not sure if euros or dollars that the parties have agreed to give to engage business participation in the convention. So I think there is, we should reevaluate here, because there are very much different values. You know, what we consider more to have more effective participation from non-speaking, from the non-speaking world, or to engage the business. Well, then I would pass on to the process itself. As you can see on our checklist, the process is really poor and in some items really deeply failing. No? But we would like really to highlight the blocking action of some countries, as Canada, Australia, and my country, Brazil. Then I have a colleague here that will further explain and make some precise points on each of one of those blocking actions and the strategy. But I also would like to highlight the support from Norway and Slovenia on behalf of the European Union that have been very helpful in many of the critical issues, but also the joint effort of the African countries that are really struggling to move us in direction of, for example, in the critical issues of GE trees to get us here out of here with a moratorium. And also, I'd like to really thank to the effort of Bolivia and Panama delegation, because with all their constraints, with all their difficulties, with such a small delegation with no funds to come here, they have been really helpful. Especially Bolivia in Forest Biodiversity Group. And to close this very quick overview, we would urge, now that we are one day prior to the ministerial meeting begun, that people that arrive now, they have a chance to really, if they want to make a turn. They should really connect to what's happening in the world outside the fancy maritime and the matrix net that is going on there. We are going over the major, one of the major food crises that we ever experienced in the latest decades. Impact of agrofuels expansion in southern countries are not a diplomatic issue that should be within brackets, discussed and over the corridors. It's something that has impacted directly and in a very violent way over many people's livelihoods, lands, waters, and territories, other than forests and indigenous areas. Maybe it's time for us to really realize what's the biodiversity. We are tweeting about life. We are dealing with the issue of a biodiversity erosion that is massive, and we are not being able to halt. And people and the negotiators here are reducing the issue to a trade opportunity, to business trade-offs, and we should not allow this. We really should not allow. And then I would like to speak something from my point of view and direct to my country. We had a Brazilian guy was the first president of FAO, right after the Second World War II. His name was Josué de Castro. He was maybe not known for the new generation, but he was very known for all the, I think the majority of all the ministers that are coming here. And he wrote The Geography of Hunger and The Geopolitics of Hunger. And he was one of the first to really get the hunger as a political issue and to connect it with all the what we would call today, you know, all the ecological implications of this industrial life that we have. So I would direct a plea to my delegation that in the memory of all of our diplomatic efforts as a southern country that had the honor to host the Rio 92, that they do not reduce the Brazilian participation in this convention to a trade balcon, you know, that this is not the place to sell ethanol at any cost. This is a place where political engaged people have a mandate to deal with the most threat and danger issues that are over existence of life in this planet. Thank you.